Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. On his sixth day as president, Joe Biden issued a memorandum condemning the racist acts and discrimination toward Asian Americans that have been on the rise since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. It acknowledges how that behavior has put individuals, families, communities, and businesses at risk. And then it notes, quote, "The federal government must recognize that it has played a role in furthering these xenophobic sentiments through the actions of political leaders, including references to the COVID-19 pandemic by the geographic location of its origin," close quote. Then 2 days later, on January 28th, the brutal video surfaced of an attack on an 84-year-old Asian man in San Francisco that resulted in his death. How is this harassment affecting the lives and livelihoods of Asian Americans, and what is being done to stop it? In a few minutes, we'll hear from a UMBC researcher who has been tracking how hate sentiment and discrimination affects the mental health of Chinese American families. First, we'll hear from John C. Yang, president and CEO of Asian Americans Advancing Justice, Asian American Justice Center. Yang has more than two decades of policy, litigation, and corporate experience in the Obama administration as senior advisor for trade and strategic initiatives at the U.S. Department of Commerce. He was a principal advisor on issues related to Asia. He also worked in Shanghai, China, for several years as the legal director for the Asia-Pacific operations of a U.S. Fortune 200 company. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
What is Advancing Justice, AAJC?
It's a civil rights organization that focuses on the civil rights of Asian Americans and to promote a fair and equitable society for all. So what we work on are issues around immigration, issues around voting, a lot, oftentimes untold stories about how Asian Americans fit into here in the United States and the stories that we have to contribute to this country.
Asian Americans have been the target of racism and xenophobia related to the coronavirus during this past year. In your view, how did we get here?
Unfortunately, there were certain politicians, including the prior president, that focused on the country of so-called origin of this virus and referred to this as the Chinese virus or the Wuhan flu, even though we know from CDC and WHO that that terminology stigmatizes a community. And so the fact is, words matter. And the fact that he used this type of terminology demonized our community and put our community under attack in this manner.
And how does your organization work to combat this mistreatment?
Well, unfortunately, there is a long history that we have to look at with respect to how Asian Americans are seen as a perpetual foreigner. That goes back to whether you want to talk about the yellow peril of the late 1800s to the incarceration of Japanese Americans in World War II for so-called dual loyalties, or the backlash against South Asians, Muslim Americans, Middle Eastern Americans after 9/11. So what we need to do is, number one, is focus on data, recognizing that the data tells stories, making sure that we document the anti-Asian sentiment, the anti-Asian racism that we've seen. And then number two is educate the community. Educate the community about the fact that Asian Americans have been in this country for centuries, have contributed to this country, and are part of the fabric of this country. And this notion of us being seen as foreigners, as being the other that should be demonized or stigmatized, is just a myth.
And for people who have been subjected to mistreatment, what resources do you provide?
Sure. So certainly, number one, we would ask them to report these incidents to www.standagainsthatred.org, because telling their stories is powerful, because then we're allowed to talk to policymakers about these stories, about this data.
And we will link to that so people don't have to try to remember that right now.
Thank you. And certainly if they are the victim of a crime or they have suffered some sort of damage, they need to report that to the appropriate authorities. Now, I want to be clear that we don't want to overcriminalize. Sometimes our law enforcement system isn't the proper solution, but it's important for people to reach out, make sure that their stories are told to the right officials. So that's number two. And the number three is making sure that we are investing in our community resources, right? Ensuring that those local community on the ground organizations have the resources that they need to respond to these victims and to give them the help that they deserve.
The reports out of the San Francisco area have been especially brutal and, in at least one case, fatal. Are you surprised this behavior is spiking now, a year into the pandemic?
Yes and no. Like I said, unfortunately, there have been people that have been conditioned to think of Asian Americans as the enemy or as the other because of words and statements by others. I am surprised by the brutality and the tragedy of what has happened recently. I am also immensely angered by the fact that these have involved elders that are especially vulnerable. One thing that we have thought about is whether the fact that it's Lunar New Year and the fact that we are at a time when there are people that feel economic insecurity has played a role in this. This idea that because elderly people carry cash, and they are more defenseless, that certainly may have contributed to what we have seen recently. But the tragedy of the situation cannot be overemphasized.
That's John C. Yang, President and Executive Director of Advancing Justice, AAJC. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the recent rise in racial discrimination aimed at Asian Americans and what his organization is doing about it. Maryland State Senator Susan Lee and Terry Learman, advisory board chair at the Institute of Human Virology at the University of Maryland, have led the charge calling for a congressional hearing to address the racial profiling of scientists and scholars who have ties to China. Some are being investigated as if those ties make them prone to espionage. Your organization, Advancing Justice, AAJC, is one of many scientific and civil rights organizations backing that request for Congress to get involved. Give us some background first on why scholars and scientists have been the target of these investigations.
Absolutely. And this is another symptom of the racism that we are seeing. This notion that because these people are Chinese, that they have so-called dual loyalties, or that somehow they are beholden to the government of China. And what we have seen, especially over the last few years, was the start of what's called the China Initiative by DOJ during the Trump administration that targets Chinese scientists, targets anyone with ties to China, and suspects them of being spies or engaging in espionage. And what we have seen from these charges, though, is that ultimately the indictments that are brought against them typically do not involve espionage. Out of around 60 cases that are public under the China Initiative, only about a quarter of them actually involve charges related to economic espionage. More typically, they involve cases regarding what's called failure to disclose relationships with a Chinese university, or disclose remuneration that they may have received from attending a symposium in China or the like.
So how many scientists have been investigated?
Unfortunately, we don't have a clear picture because FBI does not need to be transparent about this. In some public statements that the FBI has made, they've suggested as many as 2,000 scientists are under investigation. The FBI director has said that this is a so-called whole of society problem. President Trump has even gone so far as to say that every student coming over from China should be presumed to be a spy. So rhetoric like that, again, really poisons the well into having people believe a narrative that's just simply false. Most of these scientists, the vast majority of these scientists and students, are coming over for the same reason that scientists and students come over from other countries: to study, to learn, to expand scientific knowledge by working with other experts.
Well, what have been the outcomes of these investigations, or the results, the impact?
Many of these investigations are still at an early stage, but the ones that have been resolved typically have not been resolved around economic espionage. They have been resolved around these so-called more minor charges, that charges that frankly can be resolved at what I would call an administrative level. Certainly, if a person has failed to disclose certain things, they should be given a chance to cure that, a chance to correct their record. that's the typical process that's followed, whether it's in the academic field or other employment situations. But to have it brought to a criminal trial or somehow force a person to feel like they must plead guilty to some of these lesser charges to escape the specter of a charge on something different, it is something that is way overblown and an inefficient use of our justice system.
Aside from the justice system, what kind of impacts do you see from these investigations?
Well, the impact is far-ranging. Number one is with respect to willingness to come to the United States to engage in scientific studies, we have seen greater reluctance, not only from scientists from China, but from other countries, because other countries are now seeing the United States as not as welcoming. And what that means is that we have less innovation here in the United States. The science depends on this sort of collaboration for people to really advance science as quickly as they can. So that's number one. Number two is just a human toll it takes on these individual scientists that are entrapped in these types of investigations. The reality is that legal fees for these types of large-scale criminal investigations really just bankrupt people's families. They have to put second mortgages on homes, and it places them in a situation that they feel like they could no longer stay in the country. So at a personal level, it has exacted an extreme toll on a number of individuals.
What is your organization doing to put an end to questionable investigations?
Well, number one is with this new Biden administration, we do see an opportunity to do a reset. Again, we certainly agree that any actual espionage by the Chinese government must be halted, but there are smarter ways to do it. So we are asking the Biden administration to put a halt to this China initiative, review the cases that they have currently pending, and really understand the degree to which they are profiling certain scientists without real cause. Number two is just to educate the community, both to educate universities about what is happening, about what types of disclosures are necessary. Think about best practices for addressing some of these mistakes that professors and scientists may have made. And the number three is with respect to the professors and scientists themselves, is making sure they understand their legal rights and making sure if they need an attorney, that they have a resource to get that attorney. So all of these things are necessary. And then also just to raise this issue so that people understand this issue and understand that this has an effect not only on the scientific community, but again, how we view who we are as Americans and what the makeup of America really is.
John, I appreciate your walking us through this. Thank you.
No, thank you very much for addressing this.
John C. Yang is president and CEO of Asian Americans Advancing Justice, Asian American Justice Center. We've been talking about what his organization is doing to quell the racial profiling of Asian American scientists and scholars. Short break. Then a UMBC researcher talks about how Chinese American families have been affected by the anti-Asian sentiment during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about why Asian Americans, individuals, families, professionals, have been the target of racial discrimination and profiling during the COVID-19 pandemic. We just heard from the president and CEO of the Asian American Justice Center about the resources and advocacy his organization provides. Joining us now to talk about how an anti-Asian climate is affecting Chinese American families is cultural development scientist Professor Carissa Chia. She's head of the Culture, Child, and Adolescent Development Laboratory at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
First, tell us briefly what the focus of your work is at UMBC in the Culture, Child, and Adolescent Development Laboratory.
Sure. Broadly speaking, our lab is interested and focuses our research on examining the role of culture and context in child and adolescent development. And we work primarily with families of minoritized groups, both in the U.S., but also internationally. And so racial, ethnic minority groups, as well as religious minority groups, to really understand strength-based approaches and resilience in these families.
You jumped in quickly when the pandemic hit. You began work on the research strengthening Asian American families' excellence and resilience during COVID-19 last March. What does your project address and who did you talk to?
We have been working with Chinese and Korean immigrant families in the Maryland, Washington, D.C., Virginia region for over a decade. And so when the pandemic hit, and having both research and family connections in Asia and also research connections in Italy, I was particularly sort of aware of not only the path of the disease, but also its impact on Asian American communities. And so we focused our project on Chinese American families to understand their experiences with racism and racial discrimination and how that might impact their identity, development, parenting practices as points of resilience, as well as how it might impact their mental health during this period. So we designed a study so that, you know, families could report on their experiences through surveys, but also a subgroup of these families were interviewed, where we wanted to experience and understand their voices and their really their experiences in more depth.
Well, what did you hear from participants about their experiences?
So unfortunately, we found that the majority of parents and youth in our study reported being worried and very worried about experiencing harm to themselves. And that time was because of also the way that the administration and the government was handling some of these issues with regard to using terminology that made Chinese and Chinese Americans really targets of some of this frustration during the pandemic. But we found that Chinese American parents and youth were experiencing high rates of COVID-19 specific racism and discrimination. So nearly half the parents and youth reported being directly targeted by COVID-19 racial discrimination, either in person or online. And up to 88% of parents and 91% of youth reported witnessing at least one incident of COVID-19 racial discrimination, either in person or online. And we also found that higher rates of perceived racism and discrimination, both in parents and youth, were associated with poorer mental health. Even parents' experiences of discrimination were associated with their children's reported mental health outcomes as well.
Help me understand the kinds of incidents of discrimination that these parents told you about.
We focus on both online experiences, again, either witnessing racial slurs or being directly targeted by some of these racial slurs, as well as physical acts and more subtle acts up to physical and more direct discrimination or racism or violent acts that were directed towards both parents and children.
Is your research ongoing?
Yes, actually. So we finished our first wave of our data collection last year in 2020, at the end of May of 2020, and we were busy sort of analyzing and looking to see what we found at that first time point. And we are engaging in the second wave of data collection now, where we're following up with the families who participated in our first time point, as well as recruiting new families to see how a new wave, a new cohort of families might be experiencing the pandemic, which, and to be honest, we thought at that time that this would be the end of the pandemic, where we would be able to capture experiences at the peak and then at the end of it. But we're obviously still very much in the thick of things. And with the recent uptick in violent acts towards elderly Asian Americans, we're seeing also increased trauma from those experiences as well.
That's UMBC Professor Carissa Chia. On the Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her research with Chinese American families documenting anti-Asian discrimination they've been experiencing since the start of the pandemic. Last fall, you published a paper calling out special consideration of Asian American students as they re-enter school. Talk about that.
Right. So I co-authored a paper that was a research brief that was organized by the Society for Research in Child Development, which is really the main child development research organization in our field. And there were several briefs focusing on several groups of most marginalized children and what school systems and educational professionals could do to help address some of the issues that were being amplified by COVID-19. To be clear, a lot of these issues that we're identifying have been ongoing issues in terms of disparities in educational opportunities and services that were provided to these groups of children. But certainly the COVID-19 pandemic has amplified some of these inequalities, many of these inequalities. And so we tried to focus on concerns or issues that might be unique to each particular group. And so for Asian American families, certainly the increase in racism and discrimination targeting both adults and youth was something that we felt needed to be addressed. And so calling for more health professionals and school professionals to be more mindful of this as well. Another issue that Asian American communities we felt were dealing with that, again, might be amplified by the pandemic is that there's really a wide range of socioeconomic and language and country of origin variants in the Asian American group compared to other ethnic racial groups in the U.S. And so when you're thinking about reaching out to these families, when you're thinking about different types of cultural barriers, it's really important to make sure that you are addressing the needs of the particular groups in your community.
On January 26, President Joe Biden issued a memorandum to condemn and combat the racism, xenophobia, and intolerance against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in the United States related to the pandemic. What are your thoughts about this effort?
I think this is a wonderful step in the right direction. This is something that should have been done much earlier so that we could have curbed some of the trajectory and increase in, again, frustration targeting Asian American communities. But we've yet to see some concrete, I guess, products of this executive action. And that's where I would like to see more movement.
What's the first concrete action you'd like to see?
I think that we need to include and include Asian American communities and voices in this issue in terms of understanding what the needs of Asian American communities during this period are, what they're experiencing. So there should be a specific task force looking at this issue. And again, there should be a greater focus on coalition building and allyship between the different groups. And I would also like to see actually funding that supports some of the initiatives that come along with some of the recommendations.
Professor Chia, I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
You're so welcome. It's really my pleasure to be here.
Professor Carissa Chia is head of the Culture, Child, and Adolescent Development Laboratory at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. We've been talking about her latest research, Strengthening Asian American Families' Excellence and Resilience During COVID-19. It documents the racism experienced by Chinese American families and the effects that has had on mental health. We have a link to her research at the On the Record page, WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the Record. Join us again tomorrow. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.